Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast Global Fresh Series, your audio source for international produce markets, trends, market reports, and community discussion. Join us somewhere in the world as we cover all aspects of the international produce and supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Juanita Galio.
Hey, produce people, welcome to the Global Fresh Series, covering all things international in the produce world. Today is April 3rd, 2024. Hard to believe we're already into April, finishing up Easter, and I am your host, Juanita Galio, coming to you from Long Beach, California. Thank you to our listeners who join us from throughout the world. Today's show features Chris White of Fruitnet Media International. I remember Chris from my early career days in Brussels, Belgium, and caught up with him at Fruit Logistica. I am glad that you have tuned in to listen to our lively, interactive discussion about how produce has evolved since the start of his career. And certainly there have been a lot of harvests between then and now. On the international front, with 4 weeks out, I know I've made this announcement before, but it is an important show. CPMA Convention and Trade Show is coming up very quickly, April 23rd through the 25th, 2024 in Vancouver, Canada. And on the home front, Viva Fresh is 1 week away, April 11th through the 13th in Houston, Texas. And most importantly, mark your calendar for the upcoming Produce Industry Podcast Virtual Network happening April 18th at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Our featured guest is Neil Gilarty of Wild Style Media, and you won't want to miss what he has to say about digital transformation. A big thank you to our Global Fresh Series sponsor, proudly Canadian, Peak of the Market. Connect with Peak of the Market at the upcoming CPMA 2024 at their booth number 931 to capture memories at their veggie-themed photo booth and meet their passionate team and growers. Now, let's get the show started with our special guest, Chris White of Fruitnet Media International.
Hey, Chris, welcome to the show today.
Juanita, hi. Good morning, good afternoon.
Yes, from across the pond, today's guest is Chris White. He is a very familiar name in the European produce industry. Since 1988, he has been a fresh fruit and vegetable business journalist with the London-based Fruitnet Media International, a leading European media company. He also hosts a podcast called Fruitbox. Now, Chris, I remember you from the start of my produce career in Brussels with Frederick on Avenue Louise, which we have spoken about a little bit. So let's start at the very beginning, 1988. How did you come to work in the produce industry and end up with Fruitnet?
More than 35 years ago, Juanita, that's the shocking
I know, it's
thing.
Hard to believe.
It's a long
a lot
long
of produce seasons there, right? Planting and harvest.
As often happens with these things, I was in the kind of the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time. I can't exactly know what. I studied modern languages at university. I'm half Italian, although I don't sound in the least bit Italian.
We have something in common.
I studied French and German at university. Now, after I graduated, I was looking around for something to do. And a friend of mine contacted me and said she was working at this small magazine in London. And why don't I come for an interview? And I came for an interview and they offered me a job. And I didn't have anything to do. So I accepted it and thought I'd stay a few months and see how I got on. And then perhaps become a proper journalist in a newspaper or
I know that feeling
a television or radio or something like that. And then I found soon enough that I was traveling all over the world. My first trips were to places like Zimbabwe in Africa, to Australia, all over Europe. And I realized how much I loved working or reporting on an area where it was rare to find other people in the same, you know, in the same area.
Space.
There were many, many journalists around, of course. And I still sometimes think it would have been nice to become, as it were, a proper journalist and work for a proper newspaper. But actually, I've been very, very fortunate to spend, you know, the last, more than half my life now working in a particular area, which is, I think, remains extremely interesting, is hugely global, and where I've made so many contacts over so many years. And you know, it's not that I want to, the issue about being a big fish in a small pond is an issue, but it's nice that there are a lot of other journalists out there who are reporting on fruits and vegetables, but actually in the grand scheme of things, we are very, very few.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. I remember when I was in Brussels working with Frederick, very few people really understood what it was about, especially when you say, I'm working in produce. And the trade fairs were very localized. Now, for example, CL, there's a CL, Anuga, and the Fruit Logistica, Fruit Attraction. You're seeing them so much more global than you did at that time. You go to the fair then, it was just so local.
We had a hand in more than a hand, actually, in setting up Fruit Logistica. My business partner, who's a lovely man who died very sadly last year at the age of 93, he was also very influential in keeping me in the fruit and vegetable business, because he realized that I was interested in, perhaps, as I said, becoming a journalist in, you know, newspapers and stuff. And he pulled me to one side and said, look, I know that's something you're interested in, but you should give the fruit and vegetable sector a shot, because it's, for all the reasons I've just explained, it's one that's worth staying in. And he was right. I stayed in it, and I worked with him for more than 30 years. And he was running at the time an event in Berlin about fruits and vegetables as part of a major consumer trade show called Green Week, which is still going.
Oh, yeah, I know,
and
Green Week.
Very, very famous the world over. And he went to the owners of Berlin, Messe Berlin, the trade fair organizing company, and said, look, why don't we start a trade fair for fruits and vegetables? And I think at the time they thought, this guy's crazy. Nobody does a fruit and vegetable trade show. It's madness. Mm-hmm. And it's never going to succeed. And Günther was absolutely right. Günther Schweinsberg, who set up Fruit Logistica with Messe Berlin, because actually Fruit Logistica has become a huge success. And the things he did were wonderful. And the fact that he was taking this decision when he was entering his early 60s, when most people are thinking about retirement, mm-hmm. he was thinking about, how do I set up a trade show for fruits and vegetables? And it was my great good fortune to spend 30 more years working alongside Günther mm-hmm. as he developed this and many other things that we did together. Of course, there's a very big team behind Fruit Logistica, and I've been part of that team only relatively recently in the trade show in the last 20 years. But we did so many things together in Europe and then in Asia, where we developed a magazine in 1995, and I always say to my colleagues that was before the internet and email was around. We did the first issue sending faxes to people.
I remember.
And your younger listeners will not even know what a fax machine is, but we know that. And so I spent 20 years and more traveling to Asia and getting to know Asia as a market, which has been hugely fascinating, not just only from a personal point of view. It was great there to travel there, but also I think today Asia is extraordinarily instructive in how we can do things better in Europe and I have to say in North America. It has so many learnings that we can take from Asia, and that's in terms of not just products but actually about the way in which in Asia I find that they retail, they sell fruits and vegetables to us. They have a tremendous capacity for selling. Or helping us to buy, actually, which is a more important skill to have. And I think that there's a lot we can learn from that in North America and in Europe.
Yes, we have here in California a huge Asian market. And I think some of that has transferred over because we have specialty supermarkets, which I really enjoy shopping because you can tell that the focus is on fruits and vegetables. And we have the largest Vietnamese population outside of Vietnam here and right next door to me. And I'm telling you, when you go into the supermarkets, the produce section looks like an altar to the gods.
There's also an attitude of we operate a system, I think, in North America, which is where it started, and it transferred to Europe, and that's over 100 years ago with the opening of the first Piggly Wiggly. Not that far from you are where you are in Southern California there. But and essentially, we've got the same system that operates today all over the world in supermarkets, which is about, you know, you go through the doors, they give you a trolley, you go around looking at stuff, and then there's a checkout on the way out. And I think the difference I find in Asia is that there's a way in which in supermarkets, you're incentivized to buy by people,
yes.
by human beings.
Yes.
And I think this is a big, big difference and something that we need to learn how to do. Of course, the costs of all of this are different in Asia as they are in the US and Europe. But nonetheless, that spirit of wanting us, of really trying to help us to buy things, It's very, very important. It came actually to me one day. I was on holiday after a business trip to Thailand in Cambodia. And it was an enormously hot day. I was looking around those wonderful temples, and I got stopped. I stopped at this carpet shop, which was air conditioned, and there was a chap sitting on the
Oh,
outside.
that's a rare pleasure.
And he said to me, and it was like 100 and something degree heat outside, and I sat there, and he started to show me these carpets, and I said to him, "Listen, to be very honest, sir, I'm here merely to enjoy your air conditioning. Please don't try and sell me a carpet." And he kind of, feigned offense. And he said, "Sir, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm merely helping you to buy a carpet." And it was very clever, because that was for me a moment of revelation, because actually I did then buy a carpet. I spent 100 and something pounds sterling on a carpet that I didn't necessarily want.
You had
I
no
still
intention
had.
of purchasing in the first place.
And he managed to sell me something. I made an impulse decision to buy something, but it was on the basis of the storytelling he did and why I should have this thing in my life. And I've still got it. And I still remember this. And I've recounted this story on many occasions, perhaps too many occasions. But it comes back to me that I think we have to reinvent the way in which we do the selling of fresh fruits and vegetables. And we see it actually every day in our street markets, in those kind of spaces where there are human beings interacting with us,
Yes.
and helping us to buy rather than just selling to us. And I think it's a big lesson, and I think we need to learn from it.
I agree with that. I'm seeing that more and more, that the companies are beginning to realize you have to send a message. You have to tell a story about the product. You can't just let it leave it out there. And one really good example is the dragon fruit. The dragon fruit has just started to, I mean, it's always been here, but it's all of a sudden it's really become very prominent in mainstream stores. And it looks funny. People can't understand how could this thing taste. So you have to tell a story about it and get people interested. And it's starting to move. And it's actually a spectacular piece of fruit. I love the way it tastes.
It's attractive, and therefore it attracts your eye. You may not know much about it, but
very
I'm thinking
exotic
more of
looking.
Those of those basics like apples, pears, citrus, bananas, pineapples, which we all know. But we need to be told stories about them still. And there are some fantastic flavors and new varieties and new tastes and everything. And I think what we're doing now is communicating through the internet many thousand miles away. But most of our interactions on a daily basis when we go and buy food are with other people who are standing a few paces from us. And actually, today, all the activity, all the research and retailing is that how can we get you or me into the store and out of the store as seamlessly as possible without any human interaction? And I think that's a terrible shame, because actually listening to people, hearing the advice of other people on things and getting suggestions from people encourages us to buy something. And there's and actually fruits and vegetables being impulse buys, if you're suggested, look, why don't you try this variety? It really tastes great. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, somebody will say, yes, I'll try that. And we need that to engineer new sales, new repeat purchases of some pretty standard lines, where the consumption in many ways is pretty flat, if not falling a little bit.
Yes. No, I completely agree. There hasn't seemed to have been a real bump and increase in consumption of fruits and vegetables, even here in the U.S. And so to that end, we're getting really warmed up here. I want to continue this conversation, because in just coming off the Southern Exposure Conference, we talked a lot about that and the stories that are being told and how they're trying to get more fruits and vegetables in consumers' hands. So right now, we're just going to take a quick break and hear from our fabulous sponsors and those relationships in the produce and supply chain industry. Don't go away. It's just getting warmed up.
Are you ready to elevate your produce aisle and captivate customers with fresh, high-quality vegetables? Look no further than Peak of the Market, where we connect great farmers with caring consumers. Visit booth 931 at the CPMA Convention and Trade Show to connect with our passionate staff and growers to discover how we're working to fill half of every plate across North America. Learn how our core value of being rooted in growers drives every decision we make. From seed to plate, Peak unites the entire supply chain with a full service team handling everything from sales to logistics, packing, and distribution. We've got your veggie needs covered. Don't miss out. Visit Peak of the Market at booth 931 from April 23rd to April 25th at the CPMA Convention and Trade Show in Vancouver, Canada.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Global Fresh Series. If you are just joining us, welcome and a big thank you to all of our sponsors. Let's return to our interesting discussion with Chris White of FruitNet that was just getting warmed up. We're going to continue to talk about what's happening with consumers and the consumption and purchases of fresh fruits and vegetables in Europe and in the US market. Chris, over to you.
Well, I think that we face very similar challenges, and those are of, as I was saying before the break, very much about getting people to purchase for the first time, but also getting them to repeat their purchases time and time and time again. And I think the problem I see is that so many of our categories have become commoditized. You know, it's a question really of selling a huge volumes at the lowest prices. And you know, it's a very good thing in many ways, but at the same time, we all know that people want, in a sense, to be convinced to perhaps pay for something which has a bit more quality. And they're very ready to do that in all sorts of parts of their lives, whether they're buying sneakers or, I don't know, a new car, or, okay, you don't buy a new car every day, but new clothes or new things, and other parts of the food business as well, you know, that they want to pay more for getting something out of it.
A value.
The sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett, said, the price is what you pay and value is what you get. And I think we've got to think about the values of things. And I think to that extent, we in Europe, we have, of course, a much more diverse population, different languages, different countries, different ways of doing things. But actually, we're pretty, I think, similar in all sorts of ways, from, you know, from the north of Europe to the south of Europe, the west to the east. We all need to buy and eat more fruits and vegetables. Sorry.
You know, to that end, you've brought up a really good point, because living in London, you have such a strong other ethnic communities. For example, that's where I got my introduction to Indian food. And after that, there was no going back. I love Indian food now. But do you think that has infused, because people are getting so much more exposure to ethnic foods, has that infused into the main population and to the conventional supermarkets?
I think so. I mean, you know, London is extraordinarily diverse ethnically.
And Paris and Berlin would be the same.
Like many cities, wherever you are in the world, there's a diversity of ethnicity, which I think is a fantastic positive thing. And sure, we eat and enjoy many different things that we didn't used to, but that can also be as basic as the humble avocado, you know, which has become a staple in almost every shopping basket. And I can remember when it was called the avocado pear, and was something quite unusual that came from places we didn't really know terribly well. And now it's the standard thing, where actually the consumer, I don't think, really knows where it comes from, when it's in season, but they just enjoy eating it.
So you think that's the case even today, that consumers don't really understand about the origin of the avocado? They just like eating it?
I think if you stop the average consumer in the street and said, where does an avocado come from? They'd say that it comes from the local supermarket. They don't really know that it's from South Africa or Peru or...
This is a great story to tell then. This is a good story about the avocado.
What they do know is that avocados are full of, you know, excellent essential oils. It's not saturated with saturated fats. Mm-hmm. They're very good fats that are good for essential living. They taste great. And I can eat them with an egg on toast in the morning, and that's something great. And I can eat them through the day. You know, the avocado, it seems to me, is the kind of it's the chameleon of fruits.
Oh, I like that.
It'll adapt to everything and adapt to any cuisine. So you can sell it anywhere. I think the issue is less to do with, as it were, us kind of finding more ethnically diverse foods. It's actually this melting pot of different things. And that we all enjoy. Going to Asia over so many years, I've been fascinated to see the growth of demand for temperate fruits. So apples, pears, citrus, not just the tropical fruits that one I would normally associate with Asia before I went there. But of course, Asia has many diverse different climates and diverse different populations, and they all enjoy Western, if you can put it that, fruits, and have done for centuries, in fact. And we're now enjoying some of those. Sorry, say that again.
Isn't China starting to become very prominent in growing apples?
Well, China's been a massive producer of apples for many years.
But
none of us never knew about it, because we never had reason to trade with China. But China's now become a very major importer of apples. And it's great, because it's transformed the business of fruits and vegetables, not just in apples, but in many lines, because of course China's buying, you know, so much product. I mean, if you talk to a Chilean cherry exporter today, mm-hmm. they're exporting literally thousands of tons of cherries, which is astonishing. One vessel arrived, I think the last vessel of the season arrived, and they discharged, a friend was telling me yesterday, 1,800 containers of cherries and sold them all in 4 days. You know, I remember going to China, and my first trip was in 1998, 1999. And there were probably, yes, local varieties of cherries, but nobody ever thought about exporting cherries, or for that matter, any other major lines of produce to China. And and that demand from Asia has really transformed, I think, the market globally, because it's taken pressure off certain markets where, you know, in the old days, I remember Europe was the market of choice because there weren't any other markets to go around. That's not entirely true, because, you know, Chile was exporting lots of grapes and still does to North America and so on. But Asia has really, I think, transformed the balance of the industry in a very positive way.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Even the exports here in the U.S. And the Northwest, apples or cherries going to Asia is huge.
Well, I think what I've noticed it's almost 30 years since we started in Asia with our first magazine in 1995. It's 30 years next year. Wow, that's gone quickly.
It is.
but you know, when I started there, really, North American suppliers had the market almost to themselves. I remember going around markets in Japan, and really the only citrus that was available for much of the year, or some certain times of the year, was from Sunkist in California. And that was largely it. Now the market's, you know, taking produce from all over the world.
Oh, you know who's really coming on strong is Morocco.
Yes, absolutely.
I sat and visited with them and Fruit Logistica, and they're really as very keen on exporting everywhere.
But these are all new competitors to your to colleagues in North America, and this is the great thing, I think, about the fresh fruit and vegetable business, is that competition, which is global, obliges you to always innovate, try new things, be the best you can possibly be, rather than being rather indolent and not so hard working in the things you do. And I think the business of fruits and vegetables, it always amazes me how, it shouldn't do, but it always amazes me how full of entrepreneurs it is, and people who are trying new things all the time. If only we could get consumers to eat more of our products, that's the really big challenge, I think, that we need to set ourselves.
What's happening in Europe? Any new campaigns that you're seeing to, or trends to try introduce to the consumer more fruits?
Well, I think that, I mean, there's always an awful lot happening in Europe. And I think everybody is now looking at how we can grow sales of fresh fruits and vegetables. We're organizing a big event on citrus later this year in November, November the 5th, in fact, in Valencia in Spain, which is going to be focused on citrus and how can we grow consumption of citrus, because that's the major challenge that we face in our industry. There's a lot happening in Europe at the moment about new packaging legislation, which is trying to kind of outlaw, is perhaps the wrong word, but to move from plastics into other packaging types, cardboard and paper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The industry is saying, well, hold on one second, it's not as so black and white.
Oh, I think it's going to really cause a buzz. You know, it's a real upset. The best way to describe it is upsetting the apple cart.
Well,
that's a good
analogy. But I think people are squaring up for a fight on that particular issue. There's still the effect of these price hikes we had on energy that you felt less in the States, but we certainly felt it here in Europe. And, you know, lots of households across Europe don't have a huge amount of money available for purchasing, but there are lots of households who do. And I think an aging population is the challenge there is to make sure that aging population eats more fruits and vegetables. And I think people are thinking about, how do I stay fitter? How do I stay leaner? How do I live a happier and healthier life? Mm-hmm. And they're realizing that connection between, what they eat and drink, but mostly actually what they eat, and their ambition to live longer. And I think Europeans have never really actually been healthier and happier than they are today.
From having lived there, I felt that the emphasis on fruits and vegetables was always very much stronger than the U.S.
Well, yes, I'd agree with you. I think there's this kind of, how should I say, a little bit of a stereotype of the average American consumer. I mean, I know I get,
I
heard a statistic once at PMA that 50% of meals in the States are consumed in the car. And I've repeated that on several occasions and been told off by friends in the States who say, well, that's not entirely true. And I know in the US, there are parts of the US which and many parts of the US where consumption is very good, and the ethnic diversity of the US has changed in many ways the market. But I also think that there are large parts of the country where fresh produce isn't such a staple, and that's true also, I have to say, of many parts of Europe. You know, it's the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Right. I think here in the U.S., one of the trends I'm seeing in the supermarkets is they are grouping produce together with other, like a whole meal item, so that the consumer doesn't have to shop throughout the store. It's all there together. And it incentivizes them to buy everything at once, including all the fruits and vegetables they need to make the meal.
Absolutely. And I think in the States and also here in Europe, we're trying all sorts of different things. And I think we need to do new things to try and encourage the consumer to eat more produce. I think the big difference you have in the US, of course, is that you have you largely live in, outside, I suppose, some cities like New York, where the costs per square feet are very, very high. You live in bigger houses, you have bigger refrigerators, you have everything's bigger. I remember being in a department store, in a supermarket in the US, and seeing the bottle of mouthwash, which looked like it was a gallon or something like that. And of course, everything is much smaller here because we live in smaller homes and we have smaller cars have smaller
Even
stores.
Even the roads are very small, but that's
the roads are a lot smaller. Our cars are all getting a lot bigger, which is the challenge is how we're going to put these bigger cars on the smaller roads. But, things are changing.
Well, Chris, I could continue talking to you forever on this, and we're definitely going to have to schedule another meeting because I'm really enjoying this. But we're going to have to wrap it up here, and really thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show, more than I can say, especially remembering you going back to my original days starting this career. And as we say here at the Produce Industry Podcast, we will see you in the fields and on the horizon.
You've been listening to the Produce Industry Podcast Global Fresh Series with Juanita Galio. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon to get new fresh episodes. For more, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Produce Industry Podcast. Until next time, see you in the fields or on the horizon.